Julie, which village were you born in?
Karluk, Alaska.
Karluk. And how long did you stay in the village?
I lived in the village until 1942. It was just like in February, a couple months after World War II. Pearl Harbor was bombed anyhow. I think about a year before that, I gotten into a bad accident and got burnt by through a wood stove. And so did spend some time, about 6 months, in Seward Hospital, but came back and needed more medical attention for skin grafts and such. And so my dad, who is lived in Seattle and is from Norway himself, he came up to Karluk and got me and took me down to Seattle for medical attention. At that time, we had to go on a boat and be escorted, I think it must have been Coast Guard, I imagine, because we had crossing open waters, crossing the Gulf, and everything was blacked out, you know, so it took about a week to get down there on the boat.
Do you mind talking about that accident a little bit, or how it happened?
Explain how it happened, and that's it. We had a wood stove, of course, and it was on a sunny day, and there wasn't any reason, you know, for me to read. I think it was just kind of an automatic. It was a nice day, and in the village, you know, everybody kind of wanders around, visits each other, and which, you know, we all did all the time. And I happened to go, you know, by the house there, and nobody was home, but the fire was, you know, kind of going out, so I thought, well, you know, I think I'll just, you know, kind of make this burn brighter so that it doesn't go all the way out. And I went out to get some kerosene to make it burn brighter, but instead I took gasoline, and that's what, you know, inflamed it and caught on my clothes and started burning. And that was, as a result of that, is when I spent time in the hospital and then in Children's Orthopedic in Seattle. I stayed in Seattle for about, I think, 6 years, and then I came back to Karluk. And then, you know, went back there and lived and worked in canneries and such.
What happened after that? How did they get you to a doctor right away? You know, you said before there were no doctors. How did they, after that happened to you, did... They didn't have that Coast Guard around to fly in or anything at the time, did they?
No. At that time, this must have been about probably in 40. I'm not real clear on the dates, but then it was before World War II, because it was right after World War II. It's when I went to Seattle. At that time, there was, I think, the mail route around the island was by boat, and they only came around, I think it was either once a month or, it might have been just once a month at that time, but then later on went into twice a month, but I'm not real quite sure. But then after I got burnt, I, you know, had to wait until the mail boat came around, and I think the teachers at the time in the village treated me with whatever, you know, they had there, which was not very much. And then when the mailboat came around, then, you know, they put me on the mailboat, and then I had to come around, stopping in each village on the way, because he had to drop the mail off. And I don't remember the trip, how many days it took. It usually takes about, you know, took about a week, I think, to get to Kodiak from the villages after, you know, dropping off the mail. And there was no hospital here at the time. Doctor A. Holmes, the old man, was here, and he treated me. And then I think arranged from there to send me to Seward on a boat.
How old were you when that happened?
I must have been about 11, I think. About 11 years old. I'm not 11 or 12, I'm not real certain. Right around there.
You mentioned that the teachers took care of you until the mailboat came. Eunice talked about when she was a teacher and how she had to perform funerals. And it sounds like these teachers did some doctoring. What other different kinds of things did teachers do?
Well, teachers were, you know, they had the access to, you know, medication. That's where, you know, all the medication and first aid and everything else were kept in the school building. And so these teachers were non-natives into the villages. And but they were kind of looked on as people that, you know, were the only ones that would be able to, you know, really had access to the medication and everything else to treat. And so, you know, as far as other duties that they performed other than teaching, I don't really know, other than, you know, maybe like the medication, you know, giving medication and treating, you know, because they had more knowledge, I think, in that area than other people felt they did, other than the herbal, you know, things that the elder people did in the, used in the villages.
Were many of the people still using the herbal medicine then, too?
I think so. They always did. I know my mother did. You know, she always treated herself with herbs. I remember a lot of times she used to send up into the hills there and pick up certain types of herbs that she wanted, and would always do that.
Do you remember what some of them were and what she used them for?
I wished I did. I wished I'd written down a lot of that stuff, but don't know. I do know that some of the stuff was, some of the roots that she had us pick were the high bush cranberry roots, you know, and I know she used those a lot, and there was some other different types that I don't quite remember now.
Someone else told us that whenever there was a baby born in their village, there was chamomile around. Do you remember, you said your mother assisted when your first four were born. Do you remember chamomile? Did she use any herbs like that?
I remember chamomile, and I think I know that they've used it. I don't know for what. I don't remember her using it, you know, treating it, me with it in any way.
Can you tell us about a root-gathering expedition?
Root-gathering?
Well, it sounded like your mom would have you, say, you kids go out and pick certain roots and go up into the hills. Can you describe an outing like that?
Well, you know, it would. I would just run up, you know, and get something, you know, by herself. It wasn't a real, you know, gathering of a group to go up there. It was just that, you know, myself or, you know, my brother or somebody would go up and get stuff like that. And it depended on, you know, like in the summertime, those roots would, you know, like wintertime, I think, you know, you'd use roots. And I think like in the summertime, you know, of course they would be grown. And so I think they'd use other parts of it depending on the season. But I think one of the things that they also used was rhubarb leaves for drawing, you know, fever. I remember a time when I think someone was sick with high fever. They used the rhubarb leaves on the feet, you know, wrapped them up with that. I don't remember they put anything else on there, but that it was supposedly to draw, you know, the fever.
Can you, you said that your mother was one of the midwives. Were there many other village midwives, or was there usually just one woman who had that role?
There was one other midwife who did the midwifery thing before my mother was a midwife. She was an elder lady, of course, and I think used my mother as an assistant when she was growing up, you know. And then when the other lady got older and was unable to get around as much, and of course after she passed on, my mother took over her midwifery. And she delivered, you know, a lot of the babies over there from, I don't remember, it covered, I think, several generations. And then I think she had an assistant. You know, they usually kind of gotten somebody else younger, you know, to kind of pass on down, you know, get somebody younger to help, and then they would take over when, you know, you would kind of go on.
What was different about a hospital birth than a home birth that was assisted by a midwife?
One of the things that I would say is different is that, of course, there's no medication of any type, you know. Aspirin is useless. would be in a hospital, you know, I've had, you know, my first four births in Carlock without anything. And what they had was you on your knees, you know, using the gravity, you know, and not laying down. Whereas the hospital, they always had you laying on your back and then, you know, to push the baby out. But when I had my children in Carlock, my mother always had me on my knees during the last portion of the labor. And then the baby was born, you know, down like that. That would be the major, you know, difference, I would think.
Did anybody support you while you were in the last stage of labor? Was anybody holding you from behind or anything?
Yes, my mother did, you know, and her assistant, you know, she held me from behind and kind of, you know, gave me support from the back so that I wouldn't be totally, you know, standing on my own, but still leaning on her and still, you know, still on that upright position. And then somebody, her assistant, would be in front kind of, you know, helping out also.
What kind of preparation did your mother give you before the birth? Any kind of massage or anything like that?
Oh, she, one of the things they used to do over there is to give a hot banya. I'm sure you must be all familiar with a banya. They used to, you know, take the pregnant ladies into a hot banya and just really, you know, expose them to that real high heat and then, you know, get them out, you know, when they get out and then kind of, you know, lay them down and let them relax, get them into a real relaxed state. And then, of course, some massage, too. But the hot banya, I think, was one of the main, you know, major things before the birth. You know, I think it was mainly to relax the person.
Do you want to say something?
I was just wondering, Maureen, when she was visiting me in Fort Lyon, you had just mentioned that they made you walk, too, when you were in labor or something.
Oh, yeah.
You were telling her that
mm-hmm.
you walked
mm-hmm.
around,
mm-hmm.
and you had to just walk.
Yeah, that's another thing, you know, that before, the, you know, when you were in your earlier stages of labor,
mm-hmm.
they didn't want you laying around,
mm-hmm.
that you walked, you know, and to just kind of keep active in some way, you know, either do your chores or go out and walk or do something, just to keep active and not lie around.
That was not
supposed to be real good, laying around.
Can you remember if you... Did you find one easier than the other? Or was it different each time so you couldn't really compare?
There was some differences, you know. A birth is a birth one way or the other. There's, you know, some differences. You know, there's times, you know, but nothing really, you know, to compare. It's just one of those things where, like I say, a birth is a birth. You're... labor pains and feelings, you know, are different. Of course, after the first one, you know a little bit more about what's going to happen, you know. The first one is a little bit of a, you know, you're wondering, you know, what it's all going to be about.
I don't know if I made that question real clear. Comparing the two different ways of doing it with your mother and being in the hospital, do you remember one of them being easier? Like, was being on your knees easier than being on your back in the hospital?
I don't know. I don't know if one is easier than the other. I imagine the one, you know, sitting up, I think is probably easier because I never liked that idea of, you know, it was always so uncomfortable to be flat on your back with that, you know, mound on top of you. It gets, you know, it's uncomfortable. So I think standing or being on your knees was a little bit easier as far as being able to bear that, you know, that bulk, you know, the whole hanging on to baby. Medication, however, you know, being in the hospital, you know, when you feel pain, and, you know, if there's anything nearby that available to help it, you know, you're going to ask for, you know, on once. And so in that sense, that, I think, you know, was easier for me, too.
Do you know if there are still midwives out in the village doing traditional births?
I think there is some. There's always somebody, although I think they prefer and encourage most women to come into Kodiak to a doctor. But I think there's always somebody out there that will, you know, do midwife if the case happens where, you know, a woman isn't able to get out of the village. There's someone there standing by.
Did you?
Can you stop for
just a minute? Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about something else, or can you think of any other sort of features of that way of birthing that you wanted to mention?
Not right offhand, I can't think of anything, except like I said, it was just, you know, something that was just their way, you know. Then I don't know, like I mentioned, you know, sounded like, I think they're changing their method in the hospitals now, like, you know, having those birthing rooms and having a more relaxed, you know, atmosphere around them, which I think is very helpful. Sterilizing white places are always kind of scary, no matter what reason you're going in there for, whether it's to have a baby or an operation of another sort. Yeah.
What kind of things did you do when you were a little girl in the village, playing with other children?
I remember a game they called Lapture. This was just a ball game that they, it was like two sides, two team, you know, two sides. And one team, of course, was the batter and the other team was, you know, catcher. If I remember right, I may be, you know, wrong in some of the rules, but there was only two bases, you know, the one base and then the other end. I don't remember the distance between the two. And the pitcher was right in front of you, and you batted that pit. You know, the pitcher was there, and you were here, and you batted. He threw the ball towards you, and you took the ball and batted it against towards the other, you know, away. And then somebody tried to catch it, and you go run for the base. And then you get to that base, and then next time, you know, and if you didn't make a, you know, were able to come back, then the next time somebody batted and batted the ball off, then you ran back. And it, you know, that was just one of those games that we, you know, we did down there. That was a little bit different from there because it was only two bases rather than, you know, what is it, baseball has about three with four, yeah, three bases in home. This had just a one base and then the home base.
And did you have any other special games that you played with children?
We played the normal dolls, you know, and imagine tag and all of those different things. But one of the things that I don't know if anybody's ever mentioned that I would like to maybe kind of talk about is the masquerade ball. In the village where they had the new year and the old year, Russian Orthodox, of course, is the religion in the villages, and Russian New Year. You've probably heard many people talk about the starring, 3 days of starring, and all of that. Well, the New Year, and of course the masquerade balls too. But in Karluk, and I don't know how many other villages did this, but in Karluk, I know on Russian New Year's they had the old year, who was dressed in very old clothes, you know, raggedy, and I think he was stuffed up with, you know, other stuffed clothes. And he had a clock around his neck, you know, hanging in front of him, and he'd kind of go around that day, and they had the dance in the evening. But during the day, he would walk around to different homes or from home to home, and kind of just give a motion of crying, you know, crying and pointing to his clock and saying bye, goodbye, you know. And he'd do this to the different homes. And then that night, they'd have the New Year's, Russian New Year's dance. And it wasn't a masquerade. They didn't mask. There was a New Year who was dressed in all, he usually dressed in, you know, white clothes. They used to use sheets, I think, at the time, white, clean and neat and brand new looking. Mm-hmm. And then they had two guards on each side of the New Year who were also dressed in neat clothes. And they had guards because the old year was jealous because of the new year coming in. So they had the guards to, you know, to protect the new year. And they also had three devils. They were sort of greased up in black, you know, and then they had their pitchforks and their horns and everything else. And so a portion of the dance there, they'd have the new year. The new year and their guards were in there, you know, all the time. They held candles, you know, and they kind of walked around and kind of tried to enjoy. And then the old year would be coming, trying to come around and trying to get at the new year because he was very jealous. You know, he wanted to get rid of that new year because they were, you know, getting rid of him. And so, and then they had the devils, and they'd come in and they'd kind of dance around. And they were also after the old year. And so they tried, and the whole thing, you know, was... just kind of a dodge and game type thing where he was dodging, trying to dodge them, and he was trying to go after them. And he'd also try to every now and then go after the old year, but then not so much the new year, but then the old year. Well, they'd come in, the procession took like about three turns, you know, they'd come in about three times, you know, and kind of dance around and was trying to get after everybody, you know, but everybody, you know, with their pitchforks, the new year and the old year. And they dodge and all of that, and this went on for about three rounds. And then on the third round, then they sort of finally got a hold of the old year, and they went after him with their pitchforks. And usually he'd have a kind of a sack of either ketchup or cranberry juice inside, you know, but they'd, you know, kind of, you know, get a hold of that area, and it looked like blood coming out of there, and they'd roll him out of the house, out of the hall and outside. And then that would be the new end of the new old year. Mm-hmm. And then everybody would start hollering and clapping for the new year, you know, wishing a happy new year and all of that. It was kind of a neat affair and just kind of enjoyable.
Did you have any other big parties like that during the year?
That's the only thing that I could, that's the only one that I really remembered where they did an extra special thing. You know, they had different, you know, dances during the course of the year. And everybody, and it was always live music by local people. You know, everybody, a lot of people I always felt were so musically inclined, they just picked up an instrument, like, you know, mainly the guitar and accordion, you know, and they just learned to play on their own. It was really, you know, nice to be able to have people like that that would be able to play, because it beats, you know, records. Mm-hmm. And the local music was always, you know, very, you know, gay and fun sounding, a lot of fun.
Do you remember what kind it was, like what kind of music did you dance to?
A lot of them, it was always a lot of schottisches and waltzes and this type of a thing. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, whatever other songs were popular in that day and age that we were able to acquire in the village, pretty much. But a lot of it was, you know, a lot of schottisches and polkas, like they still do have here when they have the local native affairs down at the Elks Hall.
The gardens, they mentioned gardens.
We had a garden, you know, that we'd, it wasn't a big one, but you mentioned our home, you know, our home when I was young and in the villages consisted of, you know, I think a couple bedrooms and the kitchen. And of course, they always had the outhouse. You know, there was no indoor, you know, bathrooms. In Carlock, we were lucky. We had running water, as I remember. And I guess it was due to the cannery that they had in Karluk. Karluk was one of the few villages that did have a cannery, Alaska Packers. They had buildings all along the spit that was there then. And it was, I think at one time, known as one of the biggest producing salmon streams in America, in the world, yeah. I was kind of hesitant to say that because, you know, I could be contradicted, but I think if I remember right, it was that. And I know that there was a lot of salmon because it used to, you know, the river used to be just really full. You could almost go down there and pick one out of there, you know, if you wanted to go and cook one. But I've heard, you know, stories from my mother and other people say that, you know, like now, you know, how you go out into the ocean and fish for salmon. Back then, they had the beach gang. And I think they had beach gangs on the outside. But the beach gang, what they did was make one haul inside the river. And the one haul in the morning, and that's the fish. They would process that fish all day long. That's how much fish they caught just out of the river. And the cannery would be busy working that whole day on just that one, you know, haul. And so they, you know, it was really one of the, you know, really significant things about, you know, the area is that salmon. And of course, you know, like I mentioned, because of the, I started off to say about the water, because of the cannery, you know, they had to get their water, you know, for the cannery. So they plumbed it up from, you know, mountainside over to the canneries there. And so some of the homes were able to get the plumbing into their places out of that, you know, one major plumbing. And so we were able to at least get, you know, the cold water running, if not into the house, close to the house, so it wasn't a ways off. But the houses were, you know, weren't elaborate in any way, of course. You know, nobody lived elaborately. Like I said, it was a couple bedrooms and a kitchen, generally, usually a large kitchen, which served as both a cooking place and a, you know, living area. And then the gardening, my mother, we had a little spot there where we, you know, my mother had a garden. And I remember, you know, each spring we'd go out there and we'd, you know, have to dig, you know, mm-hmm. And dig the garden and plant it. And then keep it weeded, you know, and pick up, use the stuff as we needed it. And then my mother also